Hey, everybody, and welcome to the UFC 245 Aftermath, and we're going to take a look at the main card of the UFC event that just went down this past weekend, which was headlined by Usman and Colby Covington, and goddamn, what a night of fights, man. I mean, a lot of high-level shit going on Saturday night, right? And even before you get to the main card, you had Jeff Neal knocking out Mike Perry in the headlining bout on the prelims on ESPN2, so big deal for him. I'm hoping that fight really got that kid some more exposure to the public eye, just because he's so fucking talented, man. I think a lot of people are really excited about him, and you know, he's been tearing through the welterweight division and just knocked out a very. I mean, if you watch Mike Perry's his fights, he's kind of he go out on the shield type of guy, right? But he's hard to put away, very tough. And Neal just went out and, whoo, man, powerful, right? And his technique is just so sharp and crisp, so. You know, you got that fight, and that was a nice warm-up for the main card. And first up, we had Uriah Faber fighting Piotr Jan. And this was one of those fights where, you know, you realize what the difference between a guy who has been contemplating retirement is and a legit, like, not just a young guy like a Ricky Simon who's kind of working his way through the top 15. Like, we touched on this a little bit, and I mean, there's a reason Piotr Jan was such a big betting favorite, right? Like, with Ricky Simon was a big betting favorite too, but he's not. I don't think he's quite on the level that, like, Piotr Jan is. You're talking about Piotr Jan should be fighting some of the top guys in the division. So, super aggressive, really fast, young, way younger than Uriah. And, man, the reaction time just wasn't there and stuff from Uriah. And I thought that was a hard matchup for Uriah anyway, just because I thought if he had an advantage anywhere, it would probably be in the grappling department. And Piotr Jan is just so hard to secure a takedown on. And even if you do land it, he's so good at scrambling and getting back to his feet. So it was really hard to give Uriah Faber an advantage in any of the departments in this fight. And, yeah, Piotr Jan got him out of there in the third round, man. I mean, brutal knockout. And he had hurt Faber several times leading up to that. It was, and you got to wonder what's next for Uriah Faber after that fight, right? A lot of people are going to say retirement, but I think it depends on what you want to do. If Uriah Faber wants to stick around and challenge for the title, I don't know how realistic that that journey to the top is going to be at this point in his career. You know, I think you saw him run into, I mean, this Piotr Jan guy, and you kind of saw what happened, right? Like, you got to think it's going to be more of the same if he continues to fight the upper echelon in the bantamweight division. But if he just wants to fight, man, like, if he's just got the bug, I've got nothing wrong with Uriah Faber fighting. I mean, he went out and fought a top guy. That would happen to, don't get it twisted. Piotr Jan fighting a lot of guys in the top 15, he would do that too. You know, he's evolved so much as of late, and I mean, his win over Jimmy Rivera was super impressive, and he's got real power in his hands. You know, that's a tough fight for Uriah Faber. That's a tough fight for not just a guy who has contemplated retirement in the past, but that's a tough fight for anybody in the division. So, I guess it depends on what Uriah Faber is kind of feeling at this point in his career. You know, does he want to go out and, like I said, the title run probably is looking like it might be a little bit far out of reach now, you know, especially after that devastating loss. But if he just wants to fight some of the top 15 guys, I think Uriah Faber still has what it takes to hang around with those guys, you know? But, how good is Piotr Jan? I mean, his boxing is just so crisp, and he does carry real knockout power in his hands, and he's able to hurt you, and he's very aggressive. And, you know, him and Cody Garbrandt got into a backstage after the fight, and that's – I mean, Garbrandt has to get through Rafael Assuncao, who is no joke. He's got a big fight scheduled against him. But if he goes out and beats Assuncao convincingly, I mean, might have a little bit of a grudge match working there, you know. But the problem is that Cody's already booked for a fight, right? And Piotr Jan is looking like the bantamweight division is in such a weird spot, right? Because Henry Cejudo wins the title. He's now the flyweight and the bantamweight champion. Jose Aldo loses the fight, right, this past weekend, and Henry Cejudo's talking about fighting him for the bantamweight title now. But meanwhile, you've got guys like Piotr. Here's what I think should happen. If Henry Cejudo is going to hold two titles, he needs to pick which one he's going to defend. If he goes and defends the flyweight bout, the flyweight one, then I think you have to have Aljamain Sterling and Piotr Jan fight for a title eliminator bout. And you know, let the winner fight Cejudo at 135 for the belt, right? I don't understand how Jose Aldo comes down and okay, we're going to talk about that fight in a second, but I don't understand how you can, you know, ignore what people like Petr Yan, now Jermaine Sterling, have been doing within the division for a long time. So to me, I think when you look at the weight class, right, like Cejudo already beat Marais. I mean, Dillashaw's obviously out after all the shit that he went through, right? So I think when you look at the landscape of the division, man, I really think that right now the two people that I'm most interested in seeing fight for a title are Petr Yan or Aljamain Sterling. One of those two guys. And that's not to say that there aren't other people in the weight class who aren't extremely dangerous. I just don't think that what Aldo did was enough to earn title shot right away against Cejudo. But he is Jose Aldo, right? And he did look good at 135. We'll get to that in a minute. But, if I'm the matchmaker, I don't know. Like I said, 135 is in such a weird fucking spot right now. But I would probably hand Petr Yan, Aljamain Sterling, and let them duke it out for a title contender bout. I think both those guys have earned the right to kind of figure out who's next in line. And, we'll see what happens. But, And like I said, for Faber, it's going to be a matter of, do you want to fight? Like, are you just interested in fighting? Or if this was all or nothing, you might see him think about retirement. Like, if he was like, it was belt or nothing, then okay, that makes sense. And you went in, you found out, and, I hate to say it because I'm a big Uriah Faber fan, but it's probably going to be more of the same if he continues on that path. All right, next on the card, and this is one that is been pretty controversial, right? And this is Marlon Moraes versus Jose Aldo. And right off the bat, I have to start off by saying that Jose Aldo looked way better at 135 than I thought he was going to. He didn't seem drained throughout the fight. He didn't throw a lot of leg kicks, but I don't think that had anything to do with like the weight cut. That's been something that's kind of been missing from Aldo's game in his past few fights. He hasn't been throwing them as frequently. And this was a controversial one, right? And I think that this is another example of one of those fights that highlights a problem with our scoring system, right? Because I thought personally that the first round was very close. You had Marlon Moraes hurt Aldo early on with that left high kick, hit him with it again. Aldo recovered well. I mean, don't get me wrong, but Moraes was still finding success, right? And he was landing, I think he landed a few more shots than Aldo, a few more significant shots. I know Aldo was pumping stuff out and returning stuff when Moraes threw, but throughout the first round, Moraes, I thought, was landing the more significant strikes, finding success with that like lunging step-in jab, which he kind of started finding success with again in the third round, right? So this is why judging can get confusing, right? Because, okay, let's assume that you gave the first round to Moraes, because I know Aldo hurt him at the end of the round, but then he secured that throw, got on top, you know, ended the round on top, like. So let's just say, I thought the first round could have went either way, but I probably personally would have gave the edge to Marlon Moraes. It was close though, right? Second round, not close at all. But here's the problem, is that the first round was scored a 10-9 for Marlon Moraes, and the second round, assuming that you think Moraes won the first, I'm not saying you thought that, but let's just assume for the sake of this conversation that you thought Moraes won the first round. So you got a 10-9 for Moraes and a 10-9 for Aldo. How you're never going to – the problem is that the second round wasn't quite like devastating enough to give Aldo a 10-8. But how is the second round a 10-9 and the first round was a 10-9? You know, because the margin that Aldo won by in the second round was so much larger than the margin that Moraes won by in the first round, if you gave him the first round, right? So that's where I have problems. And then the third round was razor thin as well. And again, this is what I mean. Like, Aldo controlling the pace and the footwork and stuff, like, in the third round, even if you gave it to Moraes, it still felt like Jose Aldo won the fight because this is the problem with scoring round by round. You're going to get a bunch of 10-9s, but the second round was the most significant round of the fight by far. And, I did think that Moraes came out and did more work than they thought he did. You know, he landed some leg kicks in the third round again, finding success with that step-in lunging jab. Landed some nice shots. Aldo was returning too. He was returning, and he was controlling the, you know, he was controlling the footwork battle. Whereas, like, Moraes was moving, taking his shots, and then getting back out, you know, which isn't a bad game plan all the time. But there's like when Dominic Cruz implements his style like that, it's like he's – it's weird, right, because he's not applying the pressure, but he's kind of leading the dance. You know, he's controlling the footwork battle, and it more felt like Aldo was in control of the footwork, but he wasn't quite putting out the volume that really could have locked that round in for him. But regardless, okay, so this is – I mean, this is what I say all the time. If you think about what – scoring a fight means, right? It's, to me, every single time that you start a round, it's like a scale, right? It starts out right here. Both are even, right? And as one guy goes and he starts doing more, he puts more weight on his scale, right? And it starts going like this. So the problem is that the first round for Moraes might have won, but like just barely, like this. But Aldo won the second round by like a way larger margin, right? Like significantly more. So... like, I don't understand why can't you have, instead of a 10-point must system, why can't you just have 10 points available? And the first round would be like, I don't even care if you use decimal points. And I want to make a note that before I get into explaining, like, how I think the judging should work, and it's just an idea, I'm not saying it's right, but you need competent judges, people who understand what they're watching. So I want to get that out of the way before we get into this. But, okay, so if you had 10 points available and you could... like, why couldn't the first round, if you gave it to Moraes, why shouldn't that be like a 5.5 to a 4.5 round, right? Because it was razor thin. And then the second round, wouldn't that feel more of like a, like, I don't know. I wouldn't even know what to give it. Wouldn't that feel more of like a 6-4 round to you? Or maybe like a 6.5 to a 3.5 round for Aldo? You know, there wasn't a whole lot that Moraes did in that round. He didn't offer anything, and I thought that Aldo controlled it completely, right? So now I'm going to have to do some fucking math here. I'm going to have to get a calculator out, so bear with me, please. All right, so you got – let's assume that we did what I just said, right? And you give Moraes 5.5 points in the first round, but you only give him 3.5 points in the second round, right? So now he's at 9 points, and you give Aldo 4.5 points for the first round – assuming that you think he lost, right? And then you give him 6.5 points for the second round. Now Aldo's at 11, and you've got 11-9. Now Marlon Moraes going into the third round, because Aldo did so well in the second round, Moraes, the pressure is on him to make up for it. And if you got another 1 point, even if you give the third round to Moraes, it's barely his round. So you give him another 5.5 points even, like let's assume 5.5 to 4.5 round, and he's at what? 14.5 points, and Aldo is still at 11 plus 15.5. So you got a 15.5 to a 14.5 fight, right? That's, I mean, I don't know if you guys are following my logic. Maybe I need to elaborate on that a little more, but to me, that's what makes the most sense, because you're getting a real, like, 10-9 doesn't make any sense. There's a 1 point differential. But what you're looking for is, how big is the gap between what each guy did? To me, Jose Aldo won the fight, but in the scoring system, the current one that we have, I can understand why Moraes got it. It doesn't make fucking sense. Aldo won the fight as a whole, but with the current scoring system, you're going to see more stuff like this. I think Yoel Romero is a guy who, like, just based on his fighting style, he gets fucked by the system, you know? What you want is a scoring system that is representative of the gap. The gap, like, how far away is each guy pulling in each round? And you should have to make up for it accordingly. Marlon Moraes did not have to make up in the third round what he should have had to make up in order to win that fight. So, current scoring system, I don't think it's a robbery. In terms of who won the fight, yeah, Jose Aldo got robbed. He won that fucking fight. All right, moving on to, weirdly, and I didn't think it was boring, but... because, like, Jermaine Durandamine offered, this was probably the most boring fight of the card. I mean, you got some really good fucking fights. But Amanda Nunes defends her bantamweight title against Jermaine Durandamine. And, you know, Amanda comes out hot, but this mainly turned into a... I mean, she was struggling with some of the stuff that Jermaine was doing on the feet. And this is where being a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, though, just comes into play, right? Because I know that there were a lot of people probably were... but Jermaine couldn't defend the takedown. Like, there were probably a lot of people who were wishing it would stay on the feet longer, but, like, once you started seeing Jermaine find success on the feet, Amanda's a champion. She went in, took it down, and, you know, nullified everything that Jermaine was doing. It might not have been the most exciting bout in the world, but you know, Amanda Nunes still went out and proved why she's the best fighter. She got put, I mean, she had to face a little bit of adversity with a very like skillful and very long rangey fighter. And a girl who gave her some problems on the feet. And even on the ground, Jermaine was landing some of those up kicks. Jermaine didn't just, she was very defensive on the ground. She didn't have much to offer in terms of offense to get back to her feet. So it was a hard fight for her. But maybe exposed, I don't want to say exposed, but maybe showed a couple things where you can like find success against Amanda, you know? But again, like one of the things that makes Amanda Nunes one of the best in the world isn't that just that she's a phenomenal striker. And it's not just that she has like knockout power, which is what you see her do to a lot of girls, right? But it's the fact that when the fight's not going her way, she can always find another way to win. And while Jermaine, if they got into a pure kickboxing match where Jermaine could like just use her range and stuff and, you know, kind of wear some of that power out of Amanda that she carries in her hands, especially early on in the fights, you can't do that in MMA, man, because you can get taken down. And Amanda just had great timing on all of her takedowns. And there were even a couple where she didn't, and she was just able to outmuscle Jermaine. So to me, don't get me wrong, not the most exciting fight in the world, but Amanda Nunes still went out and proved why she is the best mixed martial artist in women's MMA, in the history of the sport. And props to Jermaine for, I mean, giving Amanda Nunes some trouble. And I said this when we were breaking down this fight. Amanda Nunes has almost had like a moment of realization, right? Like, oh my God, like I got this. Like, not that she's never had it, but like really come to terms with the fact that she has incredible knockout power. So she's not afraid to trade with girls, right? I mean, she knocked out Cyborg. And throughout this fight, I think you saw that Jermaine was probably a more technical fighter on the feet than Amanda, but it just didn't matter, right? Amanda's still going to be Amanda. So it's, and now you got to wonder, what's next for each of these guys, or each of these girls? Sorry, I just did a thing in my head where I remembered I didn't say who each of the last guys in the previous fight should fight, or who Jose Aldo should fight next. So let me go back to Jose Aldo real quick. I think Jose Aldo, fuck, I don't know. You want to see him fight like a top contender in that weight class, but it might be Henry Cejudo. Dana White doesn't hate the idea, right? So don't be surprised if that does happen. And for Marlon Moraes, shit, man, I really don't know. Like I said, 135 is in such a tough place right now. But anyway, I don't want to get too off topic from what we're talking about. Amanda Nunes, I don't know, because you had Irene Aldana knock out Ketlin Vieta in on the prelims. And Ketlin Vieta is ranked number 2 in the world, you know? So it's like, I don't know. There's not a lot left for Amanda that makes you think like, oh, there's a real threat right there, you know? Because I mean, maybe the most threatening girl to her title is Valentina Shevchenko, and I think Valentina belongs at 125, you know? Whereas Amanda's fought all the way up to 145, but Amanda and Valentina have gone the distance twice. I don't know. It's just, you get the feeling when Amanda Nunes is fighting, it's kind of one of those things, it's just like, who's next in line? Like, there are a lot of top contenders who are competitive within themselves, and then you get to Amanda, and it's like a mess. It's like, it was like Demetrius Johnson in the flyweight division for so long before Cejudo came along. Like, all these people are really good when they're fighting each other, but then they fight the girl at the top, and it's like, ooh, big difference here. We got, you know, I mean, there's a significant gap in the talent level between Amanda Nunes and the rest of the division. So, we'll see. And for Jermaine Durand, to me, I don't, like, she already knocked out Aspen Ladd, who is one of the top contenders in that weight class. I don't know, man. It's going to be interesting. This is why I like playing matchmaker is tough, because you've got both of the 135-pound divisions are in such weird states right now for both men and women. Anyway, sorry, I know that was a little rocky there, but let's move on to the co-main event of the evening, where Alexander Volkanovski took the featherweight title from Max Holloway, and I thought it was well-deserved. Volkanovski's footwork was incredible. He had a great fucking game plan. He was utilizing those leg kicks, and Max wasn't checking him, and it kind of got like, you could see that Max was forced to fight out of a southpaw stance. And while he's good offensively there, Max fights best when he's able to subtly switch stances, because he can mix things up on you, mix the footwork up. And I think I had Volkanovski winning rounds 1 and 2, Holloway winnings round 3 and 4, and then Volkanovski winning 5. I would have to go back and watch the fight. There was so much going on in that fucking fight, I'd have to go back and rewatch it. But masterful performance from Alexander Volkanovski. And you can, if you consider like the fact that he transitioned from rugby to MMA, and if you look at his understanding of range and footwork and movement, and just couple all of that with the fact that he has significant power in his hands and is able to wrestle really well, Volkanovski is, he's riding, what, an 18-fight win streak right now? One of the most dangerous guys in the division. And it's not that it wasn't a competitive fight. He didn't, like, blow through Max, but he won convincingly, in my opinion. I thought he won three of the rounds very convincingly. I mean, he stuck Max in that southpaw stance, and it was so brilliant just the way that he did everything and the way that he capitalized everything, right? And then also just this – so you kind of saw this in the Jose Aldo fight too, and we touched on this a little bit, right? It's like – it's not so much that Jose Aldo wasn't being offensive. It's that Volkanovski fights he fights a very cerebral striking game, right? Like his striking game is very cerebral. So he's not leaving you a lot of openings. And then when you do throw, he's great at countering. Like he's fantastic in every department, like everything you want him to go first. Okay. You want to counter? He's got trouble for you there too. He does everything so well, and he varies his attack so much, and he mixes it up. It's just really fun to watch. And, you know, you got to see him do it against the consensus greatest featherweight of all time. So I think that these two are going to run it back immediately. It was a really, really good competitive fight. Like I said, one of those fights where I don't see how you could give it to Holloway. But fuck, man. It's not, like I said, not like Holloway fought a terrible fight. He seemed confused. He seemed like, I don't know what to do, man. Like, working them leg kicks, I'm not checking them. You kind of limited my movement. And now when I'm throwing without being able to switch my stances, and you're countering over the top and just mixing things up, going to the body, going to the head, got a lot of power in the overhand right that I have to respect, so I can't get too aggressive with you. And when I was breaking this fight down, I really thought that Holloway would just like, I thought that stuff would work for Volkanovski early on. And then as the fight wore on, Max would just keep pouring on the volume. But you saw that Volkanovski shut all those doors. Those openings weren't there for Max. He couldn't even really get going. There were moments in the fight where he started to look good. Later in the rounds, he did, like, pick it up. But, goddamn, man. Alexander Volkanovski proving that he is undoubtedly the best featherweight in the world right now. You know? Like, he put Max in a position where it's Max's turn to prove, like, do I deserve another fight with this guy, you know? And after seeing that, it's kind of hard to pick against Volkanovski because, like, goddamn, even in a rematch, it's like, now, okay, so Volkanovski was able to pull all that stuff out off against Max without having the benefit of already fighting him. And I mean, I saw a Luke Thomas video where he like broke down the striking of Volkanovski and like how it was a testament to how well they game plan. So now you've not only got a game plan established against Max, who fights a similar style every fight. It's just people struggle with his footwork and his movement and his pressure and his volume, right? Well, now you solve that, and you've already felt him, and you know that you've got a power advantage over him. So now it's like, now you get to go back and refine things that you did within that fight. And I mean, City Kickboxing, man, they're doing something right. So I think that they're going to rematch, but you know, I think it's a tough fight for Max. Like I said, I think Alexander Volkanovski has put Max into a position where it's Max's turn to prove that he can beat Alex. I thought it was a convincing win. I thought it was a good win. And, you know, got to see a change of hands for the featherweight title. All right, moving on to the main event between Kamaru Usman and Colby Covington. And, man, if you thought there was going to be any grappling in this, you were, I don't know if you were disappointed. It was a great fight, right? It basically turned into a kickboxing match. I don't think there was a single takedown attempt in the whole fight. And it was a war. And I personally felt like it was 2-2 going into the fifth round. I thought that Colby threw a little more volume, landed a little bit more significantly in the first round, had some shots that really cracked Usman. And you could see that Colby was putting a little more into his punches than he normally does, showing you that he does have some like power in his hands, right? I thought the first round was very close. Every round was close. I thought that now I'm trying to remember all the rounds, right? Because Usman broke Colby's jaw in the third round. I definitely gave that round to Usman. I think I gave the second to. Okay, yes. Okay, now it's coming back to me. Sorry. Okay, so first round, I thought Colby had the advantage in striking. I thought he landed a little bit more significantly with a little more volume. And it wasn't until the end of the first round that you saw Kamaru really start to land that teep to the body that was given Colby so many problems, right? And it paid dividends as the fight wore on. Second round, Kamaru had started establishing the body work with the hooks. And I mean, he was going to the body with the jab. He was, and you know, he was, I think he was able to find a little bit more success with the straight punches and stuff. And I thought that Kamaru won the second. Third round, he breaks his jaw. I don't see how with something as significant as that happening, there's no way that you can give it to Colby Covington, right? Kamaru Usman won the third. What's so impressive, though, is that Colby Covington comes out with a broken jaw and, in my opinion, won the fourth round. I mean, say what you want about Colby and all of his antics, but he's a dog, man. I mean, you don't get a broken jaw and go out and fight Kamaru. And he was getting tagged still. Like, not afraid to trade with Kamaru. He didn't back down. Great fight from Colby. Say what you want about his personality and the way he handles everything. That man gained a lot of respect for me for going out there. You didn't have to continue fighting like that, you know? And he did, and he went out on his fucking shield, man. And in the fifth round, Kamaru Usman, obviously, you know, a lot of debate around the stoppage and stuff too, which I thought was kind of odd. But Kamaru Usman goes out, tags him with a nice straight right hand that backs Colby, hurts Colby, backs him up against the cage, and Kamaru could smell blood and just pounced, right? So at the end, Kamaru's laying on top of, like, Colby's head, kind of, like, you know, they're in a, like, position where Colby could have, like, tried for a scramble, but it would have been very hard. You could see that Kamaru readjusted his hips, and he's raining down punches, right? And I saw some people saying stuff about the illegal blows, and here's my thing with the illegal blows, right? There were, like, two of them. They were incidental. They didn't have a major impact on the outcome of the fight. Like, those punches were nowhere near as significant as the ones Kamaru landed on his feet. They were just like, and then the ones, there were some that came in from the side, but like Colby had his hand here and they were hitting like right up here. They weren't on the back of the head, in my opinion. They were like, but he did land like two to the back of the head. But you got to think, like, were those strikes significant to warrant like a stand up or something? You know, I didn't think so. I thought that even if the stoppage came a little bit later, it would have been inevitable, right? It's tough to say that, though. It's tough to say that it would have been inevitable because if you don't let it play out, you don't know. And guys like Frankie Edgar have rebounded in fights like the one against Gray Maynard, right? Like, when they seem like that's impossible. But that late in the round, you know, considering the damage that Colby has taken throughout the fight and how he looked when he got knocked down, I didn't have a problem with the stoppage. I think that you could have let it go on a little longer. Colby was around a leg and he was covering his head up like this, right? But Kamaru had his hips. Like I said, he readjusted his hips, got heavy with them, and was just raining down punches. And there's like, intelligently defending yourself means different things to different people, I guess, right? Like, if you're stuck in the bottom of mount, and you're covering up like this, right? And you're just getting wailed on, but you're covering up, but you're not escaping mount. Are you intelligently defending? I mean, technically, because you're defending, but you're also not doing anything to change your position, or you're not proving to the referee that you can do something to get yourself into a place where you can, you know, you're not proving to them that you can escape. And I don't think that Mark Goddard gave Colby quite enough time to escape, but it's also, I mean, it's tough, man. I didn't think it was like an egregious stoppage or anything like that. And like I said, those illegal blows, there were like two of them that landed. I didn't think they warranted like standing the fight back up or anything like that. And, you know, I think the judges had it like 3-1 for Colby, which to me seemed bizarre. So for Usman, it was good to go out there and, you know, get the finish. But, had it gone to a decision, I still would have gave it to Usman. I thought Usman won the second, the third, and the fifth. Fifth, undoubtedly, right? I mean, that's like a 10-8 if it gets to the distance. He definitely won the fifth. So, I don't know, man. And one of the things that I wanted to bring up in this fight, just kind of random, is another thing with the judging, right? Like, so often when you're scoring fights, all you're doing is you're looking at what you're looking at what is happening round by round, right? like, oh, this guy did this in this round, and that's what we're going to give him. And this guy did this in this round, and that's what we're going to give him. We're going to give him this score for doing this. And, you know, he landed this shot to the body, and it's worth blah, blah, blah. However you're calculating things in your head, right, to get the score. But if you look at the overall game plan of Kamaru Usman, right, the work that he did to the body slowed Colby down significantly in terms of how much he threw and just his cardio and the ability to open up those shots to the head. So it's like, okay, in the second round, those body shots might not have seemed significant, right? But in the fifth round, you saw the damage that they really did, right? Like, you saw how important those strikes were and how important it was for Usman to be throwing them through the second, third, fourth round and to religiously attack the body, right? So when you see that, it's like, don't you kind of have to look at that and go, damn, in hindsight, those kicks to the body had a lot more impact through the second and third round than you might have originally thought they would in those moments, because you don't see the result of them until later in the fight in the fifth round. So it makes you wonder, like, is there something that we're missing where you wait until the end of the fight, right, and kind of go back and say, oh, damn, like, those shots to the body actually had a huge impact. Like, maybe they should be scored worth more points, because if you look at what they did later in the fight, you now have – the problem is that you have the advantage of hindsight, right, and you don't have that when you're scoring a fight live. So I'm not saying anything's going to change in that regard. I just think it's kind of weird that you look at fighting, right, and you go, okay, well – Kamaru did some really nice body work, but, like, Colby was landing more shots to the head. But then you get into the fifth round and you go, oh, wait, the body work was the significant factor here. So shouldn't the work that he did to the body in the second round, now knowing what we know, be worth a little bit more than the work that Colby did to the head? Because the body work clearly had the impact of the fight we're on. So I don't know. Again, I'm trying to, you know, if I'm not clarifying, let me know. And I'll try to, like, think. I'll put some more thought into that and try to think about how to rephrase it a little bit more clearly, but hopefully you guys are catching my drift. I'm just saying, like, there are things that happen in fights sometimes that you don't realize how significant they are until the fight is over. And when that happens, you have to wonder, like, I didn't realize it was significant in the moment, but now that I realize how significant it was, does it deserve more points even though you don't know till later in the fight? It's an impossible thing to fix, because you can't watch a fight and go, oh, I'm changing my score in the second round now. But it is interesting, right? It's an interesting point. It's like, you could be – a guy could be losing a fight completely, right? Like, he could be losing, but he could be doing one small thing right, and as the fight wears on, he's able to capitalize on something because of what he did right. And not that was completely the case with Usman. Like I said, Usman was winning rounds, and these guys got into a war, and what a great fight. But anyway, yeah, I thought the stoppage was a little premature, but I didn't have a problem with it. It wasn't like – I wasn't pissed off about it or anything, and what a great title bout, you know? I think that at 170 pounds, the next title challenger has got to be Jorge Masvidal. It's got to be Usman versus Masvidal, man. If you consider the streak that Masvidal's on right now and just the way that he's been dealing with people, and, you know, he fights for the BMF title against Nate Diaz and Madison Square Garden and docks Ben Askren out in 5 seconds and he flatlines Darren Till, it's like, you've got to give this guy's props. He's been in the game for so long, and now he's been blitzing through the welterweight division and has great striking, a great wrestling base, good jiu-jitsu, really high fight IQ, aggressive, a kind of guy who can give Kamaru Usman some problems, in my opinion. Jorge Masvidal is one of the most dangerous guys in the division. And for Colby Covington, man, I don't know. Maybe see him fight Tyron Woodley, or maybe see Colby Covington fight a guy like Santiago Ponzinibbio. What I'd like to see happen right now at welterweight, like, the two most important fights I think you can make, in my opinion, is you still got Woodley out there who's, I mean, his loss to Kamaru Usman was convincing, very convincing, but he's still one of the top guys at 170. I think what you do is you take Kamaru Usman, you make him defend the title against Jorge Masvidal, and then you let Leon Edwards and Tyron Woodley duke it out, right? Because then, if Woodley wins, you've got a rematch, and he gets a chance to kind of redeem himself and go in and maybe put on a little bit more of a, you know, show the world that, hey, that there are more things that I can offer, because I don't even think he won a round, right? And if Edwards wins, he's a guy who's been working hard through the welterweight division, and a win over Woodley really secures a title shot for him. And Yeah, man, and Masvidal versus Usman to me is just the most exciting fight you can make in the division, because I know Leon Edwards is, he deserves all the respect in the world, but Usman already has a win over him. And I know it was a long fucking time ago, and Leon Edwards has grown a lot since then. But to me, this is, there's just something about, like, when we're going in this era, like what we're in right now, there's something about, like, Jorge Masvidal feels like the guy that needs to fight for the title right now. That feels like it's what needs to happen. He can sit around and wait for maybe another Diaz, like a Nick Diaz fight, or see what happens with Conor and Cowboy. But when you've been in the game for as long as Masvidal has, if I was him, I'd be wanting to prove that I'm the best in the world, especially considering the unique position that you're in right now because of the work that you've done. Go get your belt, man. Go fight for that title. That would be what I'd want to see. But all right, thank you for hanging with me in this one. I know it was choppy at times. I was trying to like lay my thoughts out and organize a lot of them and getting caught up as I was going through them. But anyway, go check out our new website, mixedmartialanalysis.com. Hit the subscribe button if you liked what you heard. Give us a thumbs up, thumbs down, leave comments. Let me know what you guys thought about the fights. And you can find if you're listening on iTunes, the podcast is also on YouTube and Google Play. And obviously, if you're listening on any of the other platforms, it's available on the ones I just mentioned. And we'll be rolling out I'm going to roll out a breakdown for the fights coming up this weekend, which are headlined by Frankie Edgar and the Korean Zombie. But that's at like 5 a.m. in the morning Eastern time. And I'm on mountain time, so I gotta, like, I either gotta stay up super fucking late to see him or wake up super fucking early. So I might just watch the recorded version of him or whatever when I actually wake up in the morning. So, but we'll get one of those out. I'm hoping to do it like Wednesday or Thursday. There's like 6 fights in the main card. So whenever they do that, it always takes me a little longer because you got an extra fight to look over, right? And a lot of the times on cards like this, you don't have the, like, with this pass card, I have the advantage of, like, I always go back and watch their most recent fights over and try to like look for what each guy might be able to capitalize on in each fight. But I also have the advantage of seeing them fight so many other times. So there's like probably some subconscious calculation you do based on what you've seen in the past from those guys, right? Because they were all big stars. Everybody who fought on this card was really well known. So yeah, we'll get one out for the UFC event coming up this weekend. There's also some Bellator events coming up that we'll touch on a little bit in that breakdown. And yeah, I think that's it, though. Thank you guys for tuning in. I appreciate it, and have a good day. Bye-bye.